The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 510, recorded on July 31st, 2018.
Welcome to the 510th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 343rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Durf.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, we have a really... The first news item is really, really pathetic and scary at the same time. We'll be discussing it in a few, but it's just... makes you want to shake your head. And say, oh yeah, this is Trump's America. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott? As if we didn't know.
I've been playing Octopath Traveler. I got the game, last weekend, and I've been playing it just a lot. And
for those of you who don't know, Scott was talking about it a lot in the Skype messaging in the past week, how excited he is.
I let them know that I got the game, and I've been enjoying it, and I've gone... I like that you could start with your own choice of character, so you don't have to do what other people have done. And I picked the scholar-slash-wizard guy, and I started going along that path, and I felt like I had to pick the cleric next. It just seemed like that was the next path, and then I got the huntress and the alchemist and the thief characters, and they each have their own... quest line, and that's like Saga Frontier as well, where they have their own little mission. The scholar is hunting down this ancient missing book. The thief is hunting dragon gems, and the cleric is doing this burning rite for her religion to save her family. And Huntress is trying to find her lost master, and so on. So they each have their own quest. Start interlinking at some point, and it's the game mechanics are fun and quite challenging, and I enjoy it. I've gotten a good.
DJ, you've played this. You know what the heck he's talking about, right?
Yes, I do. Conversely, on my end, I started with the thief, and then I started a second game with the dancer. And yes, they all have very vastly different stories and objectives. So, you find the other characters in a playthrough, and you learn a little bit about them. But, the game is going to be replayable to the point where you start from another story and go through their journey on their own. And it's... That's neat. That's a very Saga Frontier thing, where Saga Frontier, every character could come across the other characters,
like Ultima 3.
Yeah.
But Dragon Age Origins, for that matter.
But the story progresses from their particular perspective towards their goal.
You know what's funny about
Dragon Age? You get an idea of the other people's goals, as inklings and sort of as hint. Well, you learn about them, but you don't really pursue their objectives as much as you pursue your own per story, per character.
You know, the funny thing about Dragon Age Origins is you get to pick different origins, but you cross paths with the other origins, except it's if Duncan never went to them, which means they're dead, because Duncan didn't save them. So all the stories are going on, but it's sort of like For Want of a Nail. You know, if you don't play the dwarf noble, they talk about, the brother was sent off into exile in the deep roads and he was killed, and all this is going on because the dwarf noble... character isn't there. So, sort of sounds sort of like that, except you actually meet the other characters. In Ultima 3, you choose what character you are, your class, and then you meet all the other classes, except for the one person that you meet would have been you had you not picked that class, because it's one of every class. But if you pick, say, the shepherd, you'll meet the shepherd, but the shepherd won't join you, because there's already a shepherd in the party.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have you been playing, TJ?
So, I'm going to EVO 2018 this next weekend, which is the largest fighting game tournament in the world.
Oh, it's funny. I'm covering as media Power Morphicon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, which is naturally a Power Rangers convention.
I would almost trade you. That sounds fun. But I am excited for this
week. The cosplay alone is going to be worth going.
There's been a lot of cool Sentai stuff lately.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just going to be Power Morphers or is it going to actually include the Sentai.
But, yeah, me and a bunch of my crew are going as liaisons to a certain crew. We're going to be doing a lot of interviews, doing a lot of fighting games. I'm going to play Soul Calibur 6, so that's going to be fun.
I did. And E3.
And I'm going to throw down with some famous people on Street Fighter and Blaze Blue and Guilty Gear, and it's going to be a blast.
Do they know you're ranked?
I actually won't be competing officially. I didn't know I was going to Evo until the last second, and it costs $60 to engage in any of the major tournaments, so like I didn't want to spend $60 and then not go to Las Vegas and be out $60.
Oh, so you're going to be near Los Angeles, but not quite.
Sort of. Is Las Vegas that close to Los Angeles?
It's a bus ride.
Huh.
It's going to be interesting because Evo is known in the past for being so misogynistic, it's not even funny. It'll be interesting to see if it's changed much at all.
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is that a lot of people are going to have fun playing fighting games.
Hopefully not at the expense of anybody else.
Right.
So, I've been playing Abstracticism. No, I'm kidding. I haven't been playing much. I've been playing XCOM 2 just to kill time. And it's funny, I'm playing yet another campaign. It's one of those games like Civilization in which even when you win, you know, I'm going to try it again. There's just enough random to make different challenges. But that's it. I'm sending back the Classics disc. I'm going to see what I get back from Gamefly this time. But, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, what's coming out soon is Red Dead Redemption 2, and I'm starting to think about that a lot. Sort of like, I know what I'm using the $90 credit I have on my GameStop card for.
Yeah. You gonna go for any special editions, or you just gonna get standard?
I'll go for the best special edition I can get, because, you know, why not?
They have a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah, but it has to be from GameStop, just so you know. I can't get whatever magnificent digital edition is going to be available on the store.
Yeah. Speaking of Red Dead, I didn't play it, but I did show Samantha a bunch of stuff about that game, just to get her sort of up to speed for it. And
just let her play Undead Nightmare. That'll be enough for anybody.
Well, it reminded me of how much I hate the ending of the first Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, I love the ending.
I like it up to a certain point, and then it keeps going and ruins itself.
Oh, no. We can do spoilers on a game that's a couple of years old. So, for those of you who don't know, after all the work you do for the FBI, you're sent back home to your farm like you wanted, and there's a long brace of missions, which is just, we're going to do this little cattle run, or we're going to fix the fences, or we're going to hunt for cougar who's been, you know, all this dreary, humdrum, you know,
life on the farm
sort of stuff, which, by the way, to me, sort of screened, yeah, this isn't the end, something bad's going to happen, and lo and behold, something bad does happen. The FBI descends on your farm and decides to kill everybody. First, they kill your quote-unquote uncle. He's not really your uncle, but you always call him an uncle.
He's just a drunk farmhand.
And it looks like they want to kill your wife and kid for whatever reason. I don't know, maybe leave no witnesses alive. But the ending, you're in the barn. You open the barn. There's like 20 people there. And the last thing you do is use your bullet time to shoot as many of the FBI as possible. Unfortunately, you can't kill... Oh, damn, I forgot his name.
Edgar Ross.
Edgar Ross, yeah, you can't kill him. You can't kill his lieutenant, which is fine, you know. So, John Marston predictably gets shot up like a... gets shot full of holes. But that still isn't the end of the game!
It should be, and therein lies my problem.
Oh, well, here's the thing. So, the game fast forwards, I think, like 15 years later, maybe 10 years later, depends on how old he was. But you then start playing as Jack Marston, who is John Marston's son. And he's grizzled. And his mission is to kill Edgar Ross. And here's the thing. I noticed something. You can shoot his buddy and his wife and lose karma. But when you shoot Edgar Ross, you get all that karma back. It's like, yeah. But here's the thing. It's like another secret test. Because there is not a so secret test with the I Know You missions, which is brilliant. I love the I Know You missions, in which Jack is met by this guy in a stovepipe hat and a handlebar mustache, who claims to know everything about him. And one of the things he does is says, "This is a wonderful spot, isn't it?" While he's looking down on his farm on a hill. Later, that turns out to be your gravestone. And it's implied he's either God or the devil.
Or death.
Or just death. You know, one of the hints is John Marston aims his gun at you when he gets really exasperated. He says, "Damn you! Damn you!" And the guy just responds, "Many people have, John. Many people have." And he fires at him, and none of the bullets seem to affect him, and he just walks away. Which sort of implies he's God. Because what you say, "God damn you," right? So, but during those missions, he's doing these morality missions. Do you help the nun or do you steal it from the nun? That sort of stuff. Just, you know, in Red Dead Redemption, I always play John as someone who's really trying to atone, and he always takes the moral high road, which makes the story a lot sadder, of course. So you don't like Jack Marston going and doing his own little murder run, huh?
It's so fucking deflating. It's okay. You know what was great? Like having that last hurrah for John Marston. He goes out there, he tries to save his wife and son, and he does, and he dies for it. That's in my opinion, roll the credits. You really made an impactful moment in there. But no, Rockstar is like, "Hey, let's give him some cheap closure." So they just throw 15 years at you. Now you're Jack Marston. You go and kill Edgar Ross.
Well, here's the thing.
You don't want revenge?
I do want revenge, but
no,
I wanted
the
over the No. Hold on. I want revenge
that
over the
Jack
course
Marston
of the
is going down his father's outlaw path. It's sort of like, yeah, we're starting the same cycle over again. That's what it seems like. What's funny is that one of the things I love about it, though, is when you shoot, after you shoot Edgar Ross, you're there in the rain, and then Jack turns around and walks towards the camera, and then it freezes, and it says Red Dead Redemption.
It's so worthless. It should have been Red Dead Redemption 2. It should have been Red Dead Redemption 2. You take Jack Marston, you grow up, you hunt down Edgar Ross. That would have been a much better sequel than what we're about to get. I don't mind Dutch Vanderland. I think he's an awesome character. I'm happy to learn more about him. But God, how deflating was it when you just get Jack Marston and then you just go gun down Edgar Ross in the span of 15 minutes?
I actually saved that moment on my... on my Xbox, it's my video. It's the video that greets you.
It feels so worthless. I'm sorry. You guys may like it, but I hate it. I think it should have been Red Dead Redemption 2.
So you're just saying you don't like it because it was you wanted it to be the base for the sequel.
It's cheap satisfaction against what could have been a great sequel plot.
It's like getting a fast food burger as opposed to a higher class.
I liked it. You know, you may have been disappointed, but I actually pretty much liked that ending. You know who I hope reappears, though? Although,
who's that?
He died in 2011, so it may not happen. Landon Ricketts. He's the cool gunfighter that you meet.
Oh, that's right.
He's played by Ross Hagen, which every Mystery Science Theater 3000 guy knows from stuff like... the Hellcats and Side Hackers. And by the way, that was actually his last two roles, was as Landon Ricketts. He also was in Wonder Woman. Just, you know, that has nothing to do with the DC character. It's a it's one of the movies that Quentin Tarantino probably masturbates over. Because it's girls and guns and cheesy 70s shot in Philippines. There's a riff tracks of it. You got to see it. It's hilarious.
Okay.
So and nothing against voice anyone. Actor, but it would be nice. Landon Ricketts survived the game. He was old, but he still survived the game.
Nothing against anyone who liked that ending. I just thought it was a wasted opportunity.
Well, would you rather it began like it did in Undead Nightmare? Oh, by the way, John is alive. They made it to the farm, and then his wife and child become zombies.
Yeah, but of course that's just a canonical, an uncanonical side story, well, which
no,
is fine.
Well, here's the thing. It's actually an alternate ending to the first game, because the first game, the FBI descend on you. In this, you did all your shit for the FBI. The FBI doesn't descend on you because a zombie nightmare has broken out, because some asshole upset... Who's the Mayan god? They upset one of the Mayan gods, and the Mayan god has cursed everybody. And then you get to... The thing that I hate about that game is that the thing with the Bigfoot... God, that was so depressing. Yeah, you shot the Bigfoot's entire family, and now all he wants is for you to shoot him, because he's the last Bigfoot. Of course, in the first Red Dead Redemption, you can hunt all the buffalo to extinction. And you get an achievement for that. You also get an achievement for tying someone up and putting them on the tracks in front of a railroad train.
The Dick Dastardly.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, with all the stuff you can do in that game, the one thing you can't is sleep with a prostitute. And I think, I don't know if they...
He's married. He's happily married.
That,
that's why he can't make himself to do it.
I just didn't know if the... If that was the developer's
well,
thing.
Well, here's the thing. His wife was a prostitute, so he's already sleeping with a hooker. He just married her.
I mean, you can say that, but Michael in Grand Theft Auto 5 fucks prostitutes, so it's like, yeah. Really? I don't know.
I would like to think the developers wanted to say he was faithful and that they wanted his character to remain faithful despite whatever the player wanted.
But here's the thing. He is faithful because he... If you listen to the backstory, his wife was a prostitute that he fell in love with, and he rescued her from a life of prostitution, you know, and he doesn't care that she was a prostitute, she just married her, she no longer has to do it anymore, so.
It's more of a developmental thing about a character building thing about John Marston than it is about a function of the game.
Okay. That's what I was hoping.
He wants to be a good guy. He's trying to leave the gang far behind himself. It's up to you to figure out if he's still a good person or not.
Yeah.
Like I said, I played him as a good person because otherwise it would be just sort of like, what's the point? Why isn't he with the gang then? I mean, yeah. There's nothing to indicate that they particularly hate each other. He just left the gang and said, I don't want any more of this.
Right. But good or bad, John Marston ain't into no thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, John Marston becomes a zombie in the second game, spoiler. But even then, it isn't such a downer in that game when he becomes a zombie because he just rises back and he still has his gun and he's going to exact revenge. So he's like Jack in the first game, except now it's John. He's a zombie and he's going to say, here I come. I'm going to ruin your day now because you killed me. Imagine if he was a zombie in the first game. He have zombie John Marston killing Edgar Ross himself. It would make no sense, but yeah. Wow, we talked a lot about Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah, I had to rant. I really
Here's
had
the thing.
To get that out there.
Scott, if you ever want to play Red Dead Redemption, you can do so without feeling dirty. Like you, you know, you can play it like. I'm playing him as a good guy. He's going to be a good guy. And he is going to be a good guy. He's going to come to a bad end.
Right.
Oh, the other thing is the use of music in Red Dead Redemption. We have to talk about.
Oh, I love the game's music.
We're doing an unintentional gaming history. Gaming history, Red Dead Redemption. And I think it did come out, 2000? When did Red Dead Redemption? Oh, it came out in 2010. So it's not quite the it's long enough. Music in it, I mean... When he's riding home, after you've completed the game, after you've done everything you've wanted to, after the FBI lets you go home to your farm, the song that plays is so beautiful, and you know you don't fast travel, you just listen to it while you're on your horse riding back to the farm. And then the other song, the main song, Dead Man's Gun, if you listen to the lyrics, it basically describes the entire game.
I wonder what song they'll use for number two.
What?
Yeah. I wonder what song they'll use for the entire plot of number two.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Probably Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi.
Pump the Jam.
Okay.
Bop. By Hanson. Very good. You know, the thing about Hanson is that they're still going, and they're still one thing about Hanson is they're extremely intelligent, and they know how to make music. And the music they're making now is really good. It's none of the teeny bopper that they were derided for, but they did that because, you know, it's catchy. They're doing some really good alternative music, if you ever listen to them.
They're producing mostly these days, aren't they?
Well, they've always produced their own stuff. Like I said, they're extremely intelligent musicians in terms of music.
Oh, I thought they were just mostly pushing other people's stuff now.
Oh, they do that too. But I mean, see, they do their own stuff, and they know how to really, and they do go out on the road.
Hmm. I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's surprising, you know. You have all these other these boy bands from the 90s, like who from Kids on the Block? Kids on the Block? Are you still listening to?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, so getting back to Red Dead Redemption, the music is awesome, and since it doesn't have cars, the riding a horse really feels good in this game. And one of the best parts about Red Dead Redemption, of course, are the glitches and the bugs.
Like your horse can end up on top of a building.
No. Most people talk about the mule woman who you ride. There's a woman who acts like a mule. That. So she acts exactly like a mule. So you ride the mule, you carry around the mule, and all that stuff. I wonder if anybody shot her and skinned her.
Oh, God.
You can do that to horses and dogs. Why not? You can do it to a mule, so I guess you can do it to her. One of the things is the game is also intelligent. If you shoot and skin a dog or a horse, John will ask himself, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. I do believe that one of my best, like, easily my favorite part of that whole game was just the most of Dutch Vanderlyn. That character sort of pulled it all together for me. Everybody else that in the gang, like Javier Consuela, the one in the fortress, I forget his name, Bill.
Yeah,
something.
he's the leader of the gang, Bill Williamson.
No, Dutch Vanderlyn was.
Oh, yeah, it was Dutch. Dutch was the last one you go after. It was Dutch.
Okay.
Dutch Vanderlyn is basically reverted to a state where, like, he's just given up on humanity and goes full savage.
I implore you.
And, like, the last speech, like, the last words he has with John are just, like, the most goosebumpy words out of any speech I've heard. I know it's the stereotype of the villain to monologue, but with Dutch Vanderlyn, it actually, like, hit home for me. The whole, like, because for those who don't know, his whole thing is, you know, we can't fight nature, we can't fight time, we can't fight anything. And when Marston tells him, well, then why don't you stop fighting? He said, because it's my nature and I can't fight myself.
Well, what did you think of? Let's talk about the other. Let's talk about Bonnie, the one character that ever flirts with John. Who, of course, denies her because he's married. But you can tell that if he wasn't married, they'd be a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you not like Nigel? Come on. Nigel West Dickens, the snake oil salesman, who's even funnier in Undead Nightmare.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot to be said for, like, the state of... Of course, Dutch Vanderlyn is a complete insane maniac and a murderer. But there's a lot to be said for his character as far as just like the instinct and nature of humanity versus the forced colonization and of the West.
The opening of the game is so good. It's one of my favorite game openers. It's like it's almost like Half-Life, in which you're just sitting there on the train and doing nothing. You get so much information. So old Biddy's talking all this casually racist stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's 1905, 5, I think. Well, Wild West is ending. You know, the government is taking control of that situation. And it's just the music on that point, too. You want to talk about Seth? Seth,
yeah.
The bonkers, crazy guy. Who, by the way, in Undead Nightmare, the zombies don't attack because they have such a kinship with each other. Who wants to marry their corpse? Was it Seth, or was it someone else in the game?
I think that's Seth.
Yeah. You also have Colonel Augustine Lande, who is a bad guy, but he's bad guy who you help, but he still has a lot of redeeming qualities. Like, you know, you see him flirting with one of the young guys under his command.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you a question. Were you surprised when you had to go to Mexico? Like, holy shit, I'm going to Mexico.
I mean, it was a certain point where it was like the game opens up. It's sort of like, I don't know, to a certain extent, it's sort of like when you're in Final Fantasy VII and you leave the city for the first time, and then you realize there's a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So that entire chapter of the game was kind of unique in that way, where it's just like, wow, you're gonna go to a whole nother country and do all this stuff there as well. Red Dead Redemption did a good job of like limiting its play area for a bit and then slowly opening it up. A lot of games sort of force that. Red Dead Redemption felt natural.
I think that's basically what happens in Grand Theft Auto in general. You have these islands or areas that you can't reach for a little while.
Yeah, but you know they're there, though.
You
have the map. I mean, with Mexico, it's like surprisingly big. You know, it's not like, oh, this is a little cul-de-sac where the game's going to take place for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I found this exchange of dialogue between the stranger and John. And I love this line. He says, "Do you remember Heidi McCourt's face?" John says, "Who?" Strange man says, She was a girl Dutch Vanderlyn shot in the head on that raid on the ferry a few years back. The same one you got shot on. Pretty girl, until her eye was hanging out by a tendon and her brain was plastered over a wall." John Marsh says, "Not really." And the strange man says, Why would you remember me, friend? You've forgotten far more more important people than me."
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The I Know You missions are good. They're a highlight of the game. They're a highlight of the whole game.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the sort of thing that I think Lost was trying to do, but never really got it right. You know, you have that mystery, and you don't know what it is. And
well, that's because J.J. Abrams didn't know what the mystery was either. He was just writing it as he went along.
Yeah, and then he quit, and then let two others do it or finish it.
Yeah, but you see, in Lost, you never got attacked in the back by a cougar out of nowhere.
That's true too.
That caused more cursing than anything else in video gaming, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Animals in Red Dead Redemption were the biggest assholes.
Yes, they were.
The bears were bad because, you know, they just took out all the shots you could do, and the cougar would just... You had to be careful with the cougar. I mean, I got good at finding the cougar before it got me because you had to listen for the growl. And then you mm-hmm. knew that it would be low and stalking you in a circle.
They didn't give any fucks. You'd be riding along on your horse, and then suddenly this bobcat comes out, takes down your horse, and then takes down you.
It's like a 1 or 2 hit kill.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's worse is you have zombie cougars in that nightmare.
Oh, God, well, thank you.
You know, it was really creepy seeing zombie horses. They would do nothing. They would just walk around, and it's like, oh, sad.
Yeah, but then you get the four horses of the apocalypse, and everything is really cool.
Actually, I shot the jackalope by accident. It's like, oh, I got the achievement for shooting a jackalope. Wasn't it an achievement? Yeah, I got an achievement. It's also part of the hunting thing, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Red Dead Redemption, where picking flowers is a way to level yourself up. And I did the entire mission for picking flowers, damn it. I picked mm-hmm. all the flowers that they asked me to.
So many gathering.
Yeah. That's if you really wanted to. I mean, it wasn't a 100 completionist type game for me, but there were a lot of things that I just wanted to complete.
I did the hunting one just because that one was interesting to do. But
about,
as far
about,
as,
did you enjoy poker?
Oh yeah, I liked the side games and there. I enjoyed the poker. I enjoyed
Liars in that one.
They did have horseshoes. Right. They also had five finger filet.
Right. Oh, I got it. I hated that game. I just couldn't do it for some reason.
And I want to say Liar's Dice, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, Liar's Dice was in it. Yeah. Yeah. But last thing about it, you know, when you were riding around, I mean, we have to talk about the land itself. It was so gorgeous. Even the desert of Mexico looked beautiful.
Mm-hmm. They did a good job on that. The atmosphere was really wonderful. And you're right, you know, just riding around. Sometimes that was like the most fun and relaxing part, was just riding around the countryside listening to the game's music.
Yeah, once you decided, you know what, I'm not gonna rush through the main story. I'm just gonna chill out and play. Just by playing, you know, treat it sort of like a relaxing Skyrim. Then it really became a lot better. It's like, yeah. I'm gonna just chill out in this world. Yeah, I'm gonna ride to this town and start playing poker. Let the story continue when I feel like it.
Yeah.
PJ, last words.
I hated the way that Red Dead Redemption ended, but
yes, that's how we started this entire thing.
I know.
But I do like Dutch Vanderland. He was my favorite part of the game, and I'm interested to see how his story plays out.
Yeah.
You're like that Toy Story meme, TJ, where you see the outraged Woody, and he's like, when you play the game and the ending lets you down, and he goes, after all we've been through, and he just looks like,
you know,
really disappointed, angry.
I would have liked a sequel to take place earlier with you playing as a Native American, because that's the one thing that Red Dead Redemption didn't have a lot of, because of the time period it took place in. It didn't have a lot of Native Americans. It had that one mission in which you have to go against... Was it Dutch who got them all to work for him, or is it someone else?
Yeah, Dutch joined them.
Yeah,
he joined,
you do is shoot at Native Americans, which is depressing to me, because they're all... I won't say they're brainwashed, but he's all convinced them to work for him.
Well, their tribe has already been destroyed, and they're pretty much the stragglers that are left, and they joined him because everything that they had was already killed.
But there were still plenty of cougars.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in that area, I think there were a lot of bears, which to me were worse than cougars. At least cougars you could take down quickly, and you could take them down with a knife. Bears don't give a fuck. They'll just walk up and slap you a few times, even if you pump shotguns in their face.
And get you that buffalo rifle.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, that game was just vicious.
Shooting all the buffalo. You just drove an entire species extinct. Congratulations! You know, Rockstar has a good way of being sarcastic without being sarcastic. You know, you shoot all the buffalo, the game, quote-unquote, congratulates you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to gaming news. First news item, Valve adds temporary fix for fake item scams on Steam. And this comes to us from Polygon. Although it does come from a lot of sources. Polygon was the main one. Yesterday, Valve removed any platform abstracticism from the Steam store, though the game was also accused of hacking players' PCs to mine cryptocurrency. The main reason it was removed was due to, quote-unquote, scamming customers with deceptive in-game items. That's sort of like arresting Al Capone for tax evasion. For instance, the player on the Team Fortress 2 forum spotted a rare rocket launcher with an identical thumbnail and description as the official TF2 item. It was only upon paying $100 for the rocket that he noticed it attached to a different game. In addition to bogus items, which range from outright scams to meme and joke items, there are also clear indications of the game's more malevolent nature. Steam users have been more vehemently complaining about Valve's lax stance on trading items ever since. When users reported fake items, scammers would start to notice and take action to avoid being detected. While the trading community admins try to contact Valve, there's been no acknowledgement or statement until now. Valve has finally taken action with a temporary fix. Now if you receive an item offer from a game you've never played or a new Steam game, warning windows come for each scenario that will pop up. On a Reddit thread, Valve employee Tony, quote-unquote, Drunken Fool Palomas also stated that Valve is now requiring approval for app name changes. Quote, we're hopeful that to dismiss two warning dialogues will be sufficient to, for people to think twice about trays containing forged items, but this is not the end of our response, and we'll continue to monitor, of course, wrote Paloma. Additionally, Paloma stated that Valve intends to restore and recover items for anyone who was tricked before the warnings were installed. These changes will, quote-unquote, hopefully be automatic, but Drunken Fool, and what an ironic name for a community manager. I don't know if that's a name you want to have for a community manager. Added that the details are still working out. According to PC Gamer, perhaps it's coincidence, or maybe it's evidence of an obvious and exploitable flaw in Valve's current approach to managing games on Steam. Either way, another game running a very similar scam with Dota 2 items came to light today. It's also been removed from a program, although another, quote-unquote, game by the same developer still remains available for purchase. Now, here's the thing. People complain to the developer, this game is slowing down my computer. And he says, well, you know, don't put it on max stats. But if you saw Abstracticism, it's a box with other boxes. It's about as basic a game as you can have. Basically, and you'll see the thing here, Abstracticism is basically a Trojan malware, which has something called Steam Service. And basically, it's taking over your computer and telling it what to do. And, oh, guess what? You're now data mining for these people for Bitcoins. Also, the items for sale are sort of telling. It's a lot of Russian stuff and Pepe and other neo-Nazi stuff. Yeah, this is a Russian company, and they're bit mining your computer and also taking care over for it. Now, one of the things that they wrote, and they said they were joking, and they removed the post, is Bitcoin is outdated. We currently use Abstracticism to mine only Monero coins. What? And then
Russian
they said
jokes
in the same
suck.
Post, Abstracticism does not mine any of cryptocurrency. Probably you're playing on a high graphics set. This is what I already talked about before. High graphics settings, because they take a bit of CPU and GPU power. If you notice any screenshots from this game, it requires less from your computer than N++ would. Eurogamer, one user from Eurogamer had a funny comment, which I had to. This Eurogamer comment said, I have my own policy about buying games on Steam. I don't buy games with descriptions that were processed on Google Translate. And the description for Abstracticism was, Abstracticism is an absolutely trivial platformer, but with the one really special feature, there is no the game over, but instead there is an ASMR soundtrack, a stylistic, minimalistic design, and a relaxing atmosphere inside. Someone set us up the bomb.
It makes me really happy when my games have an ASMR soundtrack rather than the game over.
All your base are belong to us. So basically this is Russians who are hijacking your computer so they can do Bitcoin. Thank God that cryptocurrency is on its way out.
It's really weird to see Steam actually take action on anything.
Well, here's the thing. Last time, let's stop for a second. How the fuck did this game get on Steam in the first place?
Because Steam... Okay. Well, the last time
Microsoft,
we talked about Steam...
Let's go to Microsoft for a second. The Microsoft Xbox Marketplace. People have often complained about games taking too long because they have to go through a certification process. Well, guess what? There's a reason for a fucking certification process to prevent
and
shit like
this.
Had Steam had any certification process whatsoever, this would have not gotten by day one. They would have certainly found a Trojan virus in the fucking game.
The last time we talked about Steam, if you all recall, they were going on a very hands-off approach with their curation system, where they were pretty much just going to allow everyone to put their games in there and everybody be their own authority on the situation.
I'd rather see asset flips than this. At least asset flips are just rip-offs that are, you know, at least they're not trying to use your computer and not hacking. And, oh, by the way, remember, this is a monitoring software, which means now they can control your PC and they can eavesdrop on your PC and they can steal your shit.
Right. And, I mean, this is the end result of Steam built... Okay, Steam built this shit pile. Where this kind of thing can happen, because they decided that people kept saying, you should do something about this. You should figure out how to police this, and Steam said, we have an idea. We're going to let you police yourselves, which is a terrible idea.
Oh, no. First they said, we're going to let an algorithm do it, like YouTube. Here's the thing, Steam and Valve. You know what? You're making money hand over fist. You can afford to employ 100 employees whose only job is to look at the games that are being, you know, posted. Pay them minimum wage. We don't care. You can afford $40 million out of your pockets to pay some people just to friggin' stare at games and make sure they're not doing anything bad. You know, Europe is very into, what's it called right now, controlling Valve and Steam, and that's why they're chafing, which is why they go under Luxembourg laws. Hopefully the laws that they're making in Europe is going to slap Valve in the face.
And there are other platforms that are out there that are, I would say, maybe not as big as Valve, not by any stretch of the imagination, but GOG is gaining quite some momentum.
Yes, I do.
All these other things generally don't do indie games, you know? Valve is the only
place
where you can
see. The other one that does is itch.io. is one that I've seen increasingly more for people that are developing indie games. And I see a lot of my colleagues that develop indie games going to itch.io because itch.io doesn't take really much off the top for you to put your game there.
I would rather they return Steam Greenlight and do it right. You know, don't let people vote on this shit. Just, you know, have the Steam Greenlight, figure out which games are the best, and say, look at these games. Of course, that would require hiring people to play them, hiring people to just check them out, and hiring people to make sure they work. Here's the thing, Valve, you're not too big to fail. It only takes one company. See, the thing about GOG is it's great, but it only does established games, right?
It does.
I haven't really been
old games.
You have the Humble Store, which does do, you know. But it would be nice for a place where people, you know, like the old Xbox Indie Marketplace, you can get a game for 99 cents, stuff like that, you know. At least Microsoft curated those games, but you could still play. I mean, they didn't curate it for content because we still had that game in which you try to have a woman give birth to a kid and see how far they can launch him. But at least it didn't have any monitoring Trojans on it. I mean, Xbox Indie Marketplace is also where Fortresscraft came from. Yes, it was a Minecraft ripoff, but it actually had its own fans, and it actually sold a lot, you know? Valve just is like, I don't know, they're so hands-off to the point of being... Remember when it was a really big deal when an indie game came out on Steam?
Yeah.
Or any game came out on Steam, it's like, whoa, it's not a Valve game. And now it's like, oh, well, it's one of 8,000 games.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Apple, you can say whatever you want about the Apple marketplace, that it's too crowded and, you know, but at least they are smart enough to curate games so that they don't, you know, put Trojans in your computer or your iPod.
I've had a question about the Valve and Steam in general. So if, you know, speaking of them failing, if they did fail and they collapsed and they're...
They already said a long time ago that if for whatever reason that happens, they'll allow you to burn the games to disk without any copy protection.
Okay.
They said that a long time ago. That was one of the major concerns. It was back in 2004. They said, what if this doesn't work out? Well, we'll allow you to burn the games onto the disk and you can keep them that way.
Okay, then.
I don't think Valve is going anywhere. I mean, at the very least, they'll probably... If they were to say, quote-unquote, shut down... They would probably keep their database up for like a few years before shutting that down, so you could get your stuff off. Or more likely, they'll make a deal with whatever digital people are up, like Gamersgate or something like that, and just say, "Here, take our accounts. You can now handle them."
Yeah, I could see that.
I think it's more likely that we're just going to see more developers develop their own platforms for distribution of games, like itch.io and EA's release and the Microsoft Store and things. Yep. Like, there are increasingly more places to get games besides Steam.
Yeah, you can get games off of Amazon. I mean, play them off of Amazon. There's, I think Twitch is also doing that. And then there's EA's Origins and the Ubisoft platform as well.
And
so there's a lot
also,
of...
We also have streaming. Let's not forget that. It's right. becoming a thing. And I think what's going to happen is that in 20 to 30 years, streaming will be the way to play games. Because by then, hopefully by then, everybody will have broadband at the very least. It'll be sort of like having a phone.
Mm.
But until then, you know, like I said, you know, I want to compare this to being in a bazaar, you know? And it's like, Valve, your place has to be safer than a marketplace. It has, you can't have people getting mugged in your own marketplace.
Right?
Yeah, true.
That is an extremely astute comparison.
Yeah, and one thing about the Steam community, most of the Steam community, the ones that aren't neo-Nazis or white supremacists, they often, when something like this is happening, they're going to start scrutinizing everything. You're going to find them say, oh, look, this one does it, this one does it, this one does it too.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take shit. You know, at least the Steam community knows how when Gabe Newell and his people are doing something that's on the far side of ethical, they will let them know. Because like I said, what Steam is basically a very friendly DRM. And you have to be very careful when you run a DRM not to piss people off. Because it's very easy to piss people off. This is the sort of shit you're supposed to be protecting people from. That's why they call it digital rights management. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next time. Go ahead, TJ.
Halo devs not working on Battle Royale mode for Infinite. From Ars Technica. The stratospheric success of games like Fortnite and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds in the past year has led to a wave of copycat Battle Royale titles, survival games, and modes. Even franchises like Call of Duty aren't immune, with Black Ops 4 adding a new Battle Royale mode called Blackout, while ignoring the usual single-player campaign.
By the way, I have to interrupt you for a moment. Keep in mind, the person who's speaking right now, TJ here, was one of the biggest Fortnite acolytes about a year ago, maybe even earlier than that.
I still think it's neat.
I know,
it's
but
also...
you were raving about it. You were talking, and you got offended when I was saying, "Well, why are you paying for the beta when it's going to be free to play?" It's like, no, what?
I didn't. I was offered a review copy.
Well, okay, but still.
To people that paid for it, I mean, like, I guess a month. It was only like a couple months later that they put out beta.
They're supporting the developer.
Yeah. It was investing in a thing. Anyways.
Well, it wasn't just investing. Remember, if you did pay for something, like $30, $50, whatever the price was, because they had different tiers, at least you're going to get bonus content when the game actually released.
Yeah. And I ended up they ended up putting out Battle Royale, and if you were on board up to that, you got some neat little extras for that.
Yeah. Anyways, along with the article...
It seems that the Halo series will not be following the trend, though. In a Halo 5 focused social stream hosted on Microsoft's Mixer platform last night, 343 Industries writer Jeff Easterling said the studio is not working on a Battle Royale mode for the upcoming Halo Infinite. A viewer plainly asked, "Will there be Battle Royale in Halo Infinite?" Easterling responded, definitively, "I'll tell you right now, the only BR we're interested in is the battle rifle." Wah, wah.
The original BR.
The original BR. So calm yourself. This is actually one of the most concrete pieces of information we've gotten about Halo Infinite since the game's existence was first revealed in a short gameplay-free in-engine E3 trailer. Xbox marketing chief Aaron Greenberg said in a YouTube Live interview at the show that the game's new Slipspace engine was built purposefully to take Halo in a whole new direction, but he didn't go into detail on what exactly that means. Greenberg also acknowledged in that interview that it's becoming more of a service-based industry and digital-first business. So because of that, we're definitely thinking about Halo that way. perhaps hinting at a longer-term games-as-a-service model for the game's online competition.
By the way, we talked about this last week. We talked about Microsoft reportedly doing two SKUs of the Xbox successor, and one was going to be a streaming service. I'm pretty sure this is what he was talking about. And that the Slipspace engine was to handle, you know, doing Halo Infinite as a streaming service, too.
I would have no doubt that they would launch a new Halo on a service like that.
Oh, I know, but I'm talking about Slipspace itself. I'm pretty sure it's programmed so that it can be streamed really fast. And it better be, because if you saw the graphics in Halo Infinite, they were gorgeous. Those wide open spaces. I know a lot of people were thinking, you know, I just can't wait to have a Warthog or a Banshee and doing some good old-fashioned team deathmatch or CTF on those things.
Mm-hmm. At least now it's known that New Direction doesn't involve putting a bunch of Halo soldiers in an ever-shrinking battlefield and forcing them to pick each other off until only one is left. Of course, Microsoft and 343 could change their minds on the subject between now and the time that Halo Infinite is finalized. And with Fortnite reportedly making almost obscene amounts of money, nothing almost about it, they are making obscene amounts of money, for Epic, they may not be able to ignore the mode forever.
Here's the thing. I think there will be a Battle Royale mode at some point for Halo Infinite, just because it's a new gameplay mode, right? Like Griffball. Mm-hmm. What I really hope they do is they really work hard on the Horde mode, because they jury-rigged it in Halo 5, because people wanted a Horde mode, and say, okay. And it was, meh, you know? Because when you do a Horde mode, you really have to do it from the ground up. You just can't just put a level there and just add monsters coming in. No, it has to be perfect. It has to be carefully crafted.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, Fortnite and games like it, and H1Z1 and PUBG, I've already built themselves on a mechanic where, like, you have so much shield or armor, and then your health starts going down. So that's something that would be completely adapted to Halo, where you already had Master Chief's shield, and then once he loses that, he starts losing health.
You know what I want? I want a Battle Royale mode for Halo Infinite, but all the characters are characters from Red vs. Blue.
Mm-hmm. That would be fun.
And having them constantly talking about this, about what's going on.
Doing funny Fortnite dances all the way.
Like, can you imagine what Griff would be doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it is the way of the industry right now. Battle Royale is a money printing mode where everybody is doing it. Even the people that, like, even mobile games, like, I've seen a dozen mobile games that we've seen come through our industry or that we've been looking at over at Twin Galaxies that are trying to cash in on this quick. It felt like it was going to be a quick trend. But it's grown into a lot of different esports too. Like, we just had a guy in Berlin, Germany covering an international competition for PUBG.
Well, here's the thing. You know what? I just realized. Now, they actually have, there was some news about this. It wasn't big enough news, but you know what game has been super popular and is still somewhat of a phenomenon, but no one's copied it? Rocket League.
What's that?
How many games do you know that have been aping Rocket League? You know?
Not even one.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be with cars. I mean, with anything. I mean, you could say, well, I'm surprised no one's come out with a new Speedball. I mean, Rocket League somehow has captured a zeitgeist with no one copying it. It's its own thing.
And it's an incredible thing, too. Like, it's hard to believe that nobody... I guess it's a very specific thing to a point, but, like...
Yeah, well, so is fucking Battle Royale.
Yeah.
I remember their game being called Blood Bowl. Is that like that, or is it different?
Blood Bowl is basically football with medieval fantasy fiction teams.
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me? You know what I played at E3, which I can't wait to see? Mutant League Football.
Yeah.
It's coming back again. And that's basically, you know, something like Blood Bowl, sort of like Cyber Ball. It's just football with, in this case, D&D characters. Cyber Ball, it's with robots, you know? I mean, you also had what's it called, Baseball 2020 on the Neo Geo, which was, you know, baseball with robots and futuristic stuff. But something like Rocket League, the only thing I can think of is Speedball, which came out in like 1987 on the Amiga. And that was basically just combat soccer on ice, you know.
There was a VR game that we saw at the PC Gaming Show in 2017 that was basically like Blitzball with Tron aesthetics.
And I mean, that you also have Frozen Synapse. Frozen Synapse 2 is coming out, but it's not quite like Rocket League either, because Rocket League is very action-oriented. That's the other thing.
Right.
It's very fast-paced.
That VR game we saw was the closest thing I've ever seen that came even close to what Rocket League is doing.
Yeah, but see, the thing about that game, though, I can see it's going to be really hard to just control the characters. It's going to be much more difficult. You know, at least with Rocket League, you have cars. You know what to do with a car. There's a ball there. You're trying to get the ball in the net. Boom.
Yeah, there's a lot of gravity to play against in Rocket League. That's what separates the regular players from the professionals.
Also not always chasing after the ball and just, you know, staying in the middle of the thing and waiting for the ball to come to you, because I know too many people chase the ball. If you let the ball come to you, then you're going to score a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So
you'll also be there to make some amazing saves, and your team will love you for them if you're a goalie.
But, you know, I could see there being Battle Royale in Halo simply because they... In Halo 5 and other Halos, you know, it would always be, oh, we have a special game mode coming out for like a week, like Griffball or whatever, or Oddball, stuff like that. And it would be like everybody would flock to it because, you know, hey, they're doing this week. And that's one of the good things they did. They didn't make you get bored of it. They gave you just enough for you to be satisfied, but not enough for you not to be, oh yeah, what's it called? They're doing another season of it in like 2 weeks. Let's get ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I think that I'm worried about with Battle Royale. You're going to have some variations or else people will get bored.
Yeah. There's
same game. I mean, like you have the Darwin Project, which is a variation. And funny thing is, Darwin Project precedes PUBG, which has two teams of two. And these teams are fighting the other teams and doing all that. But I mean within the same game, like, okay, you're playing PUBG, but what kind of variations within PUBG are you going to do?
Yeah. PUBG is basically its own thing where it's just like straight up very, very...
in a field. Okay, go nuts.
Well, PUBG is the original, and its biggest thing is just realistic combat. Fortnite's big thing bullet drop.
I think you may want to say relatively...
Oh, I would say that. I say that only because PUBG is based off of Arma, and the big thing behind Arma was physics combat to a degree that, like, bullet drop and wind speed were considered, and that gets translated over to PUBG. When it comes to Fortnite, the big thing is building. It's all about, like, building towers, building defenses, building whatever it takes to get around your opponent and kill them.
It's also a lot more cartoony, which is an appeal.
I don't know what Blackout is going to be for Black Ops, and I don't know what Halo's gimmick would be for itself.
I bet you Blackout will have something to do with zombies.
That was going to be my point. There is one game that I want to see turned into a Battle Royale because I think it would be awesome to play. Not DayZ. Dying Light.
Oh.
There was rumor a while back that the developers behind Dying Light were working on a Battle Royale mode for that game. And we haven't heard anything on it in a while, but that is exciting because the parkour mechanics, the melee combat, the shooting, the world building, and the way to traverse it sounds fun for an everyman for himself battle mode.
We're gonna move on. Go ahead.
So I mean, like,
yeah. I mean, we're
well, I was gonna ask you is that. Well, I was going to ask you really quick, is there a game that you can think of that you would love to see if it was going to take on a Battle Royale mode?
Let's talk about XCOM 2! Battle Royale, except turn-based and with aliens.
Interesting.
And keep in mind, it's also very vertical, so you have all these buildings and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, what about you, Scott?
What?
Well, I guess I already have it in Minecraft, which had ultra hardcore, what we called it ultra hardcore, and they did, you know, the no regenerating health, and we had a shrinking borders, and yeah, you just you had to mine up your resources and people would build forts and stuff, so well, I guess I already...
Considering you can make a cell phone inside Minecraft, you can do anything in it.
Yeah. With enough time...
Make a working cell phone, and yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Nintendo Switch sales near 20 million, down slightly from last year. This is from Eurogamer. Nintendo shifted another 1.88 million Switch consoles between April and June this year, bringing the console's lifetime sales total up to 19.6 million.
And one of them was Scott's. One of those 1.88 million was yours.
Yeah. One of them, that's right. So I helped. This figure is down slightly
See,
on
if,
the
if
same...
If you didn't buy it, it would have been 1.880099.
I don't think it would have budged it that much. This figure is down slightly on the same quarter last year when it sold 1.97 million over the same 3 months, albeit soon after the console's launch and during a period when Nintendo's released Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and ARMS. Switch is still selling well then, and roughly equivalent to PlayStation 4 at the same point in its life cycle, while only having one holiday sales period when PS4 had two. And importantly, game sales more than doubled over the same period last year, where Nintendo makes a lot of its money. Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze sold 1.4 million copies since May, while Mario Tennis Aces is already up 1.38 million copies in the first couple of weeks on sale. Combined sales of the two Nintendo Labo sets totaled 1.39 million units. So I guess that makes it better.
Yeah, well,
than...
here's the thing. They actually announced a new Labo that's going to be flight-based.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely better than the... I can't even remember the name now. I'm blanking. That red thing. The red thing that nobody liked.
Nintendo Virtual Boy.
Yeah, the Virtual Boy. Thank you. That sounds like it's done better than that one. On 3DS, Nintendo sold another 360K handhelds and 2.95 million games, both figures unsurprisingly down year on year in this. The 3DS's eighth year of release. Yeah, I haven't been playing my 3DS at all. I've been playing the Switch.
You know, I would rather get the 3DS on the last part of its life cycle. Because A, it'll be cheaper, and B, all the good games will be used, and I could just buy them, you know, like a fifth off.
Yeah, but like stuff like Animal Crossing, it'll be kind of like a ghost town. I mean, people will already
no.
moved on. And...
I'm thinking more about stuff like Pokemon, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that'll definitely be a ghost town, man.
I mean, here's the thing. I've played a lot of Pokemon, and, you know, it's sort of like... I keep dropping because it's the same game year after year after year, but I guess if I get Pokemon for like $10 on the 3DS, it'll be like, yeah, okay, it's worth it. it's been 10 years since I last played Pokemon. I guess I can play
right.
it again.
So meanwhile, Nintendo's re-release of NES Mini Micro Console shifted another 0.26 million units. I thought they stopped producing that.
No, they said they were going to stop, but they lied. Don't okay. you know they lie? Of course they lied.
Yes,
it's like Disney saying, we're never going to... This movie is going into the Disney vaults. You better get this copy because we're never, ever, ever going to release it again until 15 years and you forgot about that. We said never, never, never.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pinocchio is going in the vaults. You can't get it anymore. Oh, wait. Oh, look what's coming out. A new hyper special 70th anniversary of Pinocchio.
Interestingly, Nintendo said hardware sales in every region had trended upwards since E3. When the company made a couple of new, smaller announcements, but also showed this year's huge two Switch games, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate and Pokemon Let's Go, via hands-on demos for the first time. Apart from these two games, Nintendo's end-of-the-year slate looks quiet, barring the recently announced third Labo set and Super Mario Party in October. That said, there's still time for a couple of small surprises in a Direct in the not-too-distant future to help pad out the lineup we know already.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you something. I get press releases, right? And I'm pretty sure, TJ, you get some too. I notice that a lot of these games that are coming out, not the indie games, they're sort of like just above indie games, you know, like A, you know, not AAA, not but A games. A lot of them will say coming out on PC, Microsoft, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Switch. And I'm seeing a lot of and switch. So one of the positive things that they have to be happy about is that there's a lot of third-party development for the Switch, which the Wii and the Wii U did not get.
I mean, here's the dealio. You got these Nintendo games that catch everybody's attention, but there's a long period of time between them, and that's what hurt the Wii U incredibly bad, was that you
unless you really wanted carnival games.
Ridiculously long stretches of just shovelware between anything that mattered. And the Switch doesn't have that issue. There are worthwhile, meaningful,
what? You
small,
didn't like
small
Halo
games.
3 on the Wii U? I mean, not Halo 3. I mean, Mass Effect 3 on the Wii U?
No. I just think that it's a good thing that you like, a lot of games that, like, maybe people didn't see, like Hollow Knight or
yeah.
But here's the thing.
There's a lot of good.
It isn't just that. It's just that they're coming out. And we're not talking about shovelware here. We're talking about indie developers who say, you know what? Let's give the Switch a chance. Not because it has a lot of units. Obviously,
it doesn't have
that many units.
It gives
but
games
it's because
like Hollow Knight.
It's another audience. It's a completely different audience. And you know what? It sounds cool to sound like you're releasing for the Switch. I mean, you know, when someone says, oh, I'm releasing this game for the Switch, people go, oh, really? If they say, we're releasing it to the PS4, they say, oh, yeah, whatever.
yeah,
we know.
I mean, like,
there's a lot of stuff for the PS4.
You're thinking, I can play this game on mobile now.
Yeah, it's that portability factor. You're giving these games like Hollow Knight and Salt and Sanctuary and Binding of Isaac and, oh my god, Binding of Isaac, but you're giving these games that you just normally wouldn't see on or think of on a Nintendo system a second run of life.
Yeah. And I'm also glad that Square Enix is producing games on the Switch again. That's with Octopath Traveler, that makes me very happy.
Here's the thing. The Switch doesn't suck. There's a lot of problems with the Switch, but unlike the Wii U, you know, the Wii U is just, oh, we're finally going to put some HD on our system. You know, the Switch doesn't really have a gimmick. The only gimmick that it has is the tablet and the little two Joy-Cons, but even though those aren't that much of a gimmick. It's sort of like what happened with the Wii U.
It's straight up versatility is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't the versatility, it's just that they're saying, okay, we're done with the bullshit of the Wiimotes. You know?
And I think to myself, like, I'm packing my PS4 up for Evo because we're going to play some fighting games while we're there. And I just think, I have to plan for that. I have to plan on the right time to unhook it because me and my wife still watch, like, TV on that and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just have to plan to get the wires all together and put the controllers away and put it all up in my suitcase in a nice and compact way. With the Switch, that thing is so easy to disconnect from everything and just stow into a carrying case and put in a backpack.
There are some really bad design flaws with the Switch, which I hope, you know, there's going to be a Switch 2. You know they're going to have a redesign of the Switch. They have it with all their hardware. Hopefully the redesign of the Switch will address some of the stupid things like on how you charge them, that sort of stuff. You know, when they make it more designable for humans and not octopi, maybe they thought the characters from Splatoon were the ones who were going to buy the Switch.
Or just people with tiny hands.
Yeah.
Not even tiny hands. It's like when you charge it, you know.
Using a Joy-Con controller sideways for me and my big meaty fists is the silliest thing.
You know, my next controller purchase is going to be the Duke for the Xbox One. No, I'm serious, because I started getting trigger thumb. And it's really painful. And I know it's because the controller, while it's a great controller, it's also very small. I figure I can wrap my hands around one of those big, nice Dukes. That's what Nintendo should have done. They should have made their controllers USB, period. So you could take a Duke, you could take one of those big, meaty controllers, any controllers, and just play it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, maybe the... you know, they actually, by the way, one of the side notes articles, which is too short and too flimsy for anything, but... the Microsoft Handicap controller, I forgot what it was called again. You know, the controller that was specifically made for handicapped people, they're making the box accessible too.
Yes, which is good.
Which is, you know, planning well.
They know who they're sending this to. They know what they're doing. They seem to have planned for everything that they're doing, and that's great. I'm happy to hear that.
But on the other hand, you know, I had no idea there was a new Donkey Kong Country out. You know, so what they really need to do is now start advertising those games. You know, and I don't mean advertising. I mean knowing where to advertise them and how to advertise them.
Yeah,
I drink up game news because I get the pressure, I get all the stuff. And if a game comes out, I say, "Wait, what? That's coming out? What? Huh?"
You didn't see something wrong. You didn't see the new Funky Mode meme that was going around for like 4 months.
No, I'm not talking about memes. I don't give a shit about memes. Fuck memes. I'm talking about actual news.
Memes are what the kids listen to these days, Jonah.
No.
Yeah, those darn millennials.
Fuck Amazon. Anyways, let's just put it this way. The Switch has made enough a dent that it's good. It's actually, you know, I think Nintendo fucked up with the GameCube. The GameCube was a good piece of hardware, but they forgot the fact that people don't want little baby discs.
You heard it here, everyone. Nintendo Switch did so good that even Jonah had to admit it was good, finally.
Well, it's doing better than Nintendo 64 when Nintendo was doing cartridges when everybody else was doing discs.
Yeah, that was a sad day.
I mean, here's the thing. Nintendo had a nice system with the NES. You know, I had a launch NES. It was fine. It was fine. The Super Nintendo was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
The Nintendo 64 started hard out of the gate, but it was like, you have one game, and that's it, and people got tired of that game fairly quickly. Oh, look, Mario's in 3D. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Nintendo 64 was such a missed opportunity. The GameCube was a really good system, but Nintendo forgot that third party is where it's at, and they basically starved the GameCube to death. You know? I did not know this at the time. Oh, I knew it, but I wasn't, you know, it wasn't really something I realized. The GameCube was a more powerful system than the Xbox and the PlayStation 2. But you would have never known that because it was on tiny little discs and the games were shit.
Mm-hmm.
The Wii was just a gimmick. It was just one gimmick and people treated it like a Furby or a Power Ranger. You know, it's like everybody had to have one because you couldn't get one. The Wii U came out and they said, "Oh well, guess what? No one wants it." The Wii U is just what? HD. It's the Wii but HD. Yippee! And it did nothing. It was dead on arrival. The Wii U. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody who are really looking forward to the Wii U. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, it's a Wii U. I know people who were really excited over the PlayStation 4. I know a lot of people who are excited over the Xbox One. I knew no one who was excited over a Wii U. No one, not even the most hardcore Nintendo fan, would say, "Yeah, fuck yeah, Wii U, woo!" They actually got excited. Well, they didn't get excited over the Switch. It was sort of like, "Please don't fuck up."
Yeah, please don't suck.
That was the attitude for 2 years. You remember, TJ? Everybody was thinking, "Oh, Nintendo's coming out with a new console. They're not calling it a console, but what the fuck, it's a console." Just don't.
No,
fuck
I mean,
up.
Like, we've been doing this long enough that I can still remember a time when I was on this podcast saying Nintendo can't do anything to get their momentum back. They won't do anything, and I was wrong.
I said that.
I was right.
And here's the thing:
was right.
The big Nintendo fan of the podcast. It wasn't you, Scott. It was Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Paul was sort of like, "No, it'll do it." And then as the year went by, you notice, yeah. It's like you saw him go from enthusiasm to weary sighs.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. Scott's a Nintendo fan. He took, 14, 15 months before he actually went out and got a Switch. And not because it was hard to get. Because I know that Scott was sort of, let's see what comes.
It's done well. It's,
yeah.
I'm happy to be...
Go ahead, Scott.
I'm happy... Yeah.
I'm glad that it's done well as well, and it's getting out more games than just, you know, the Zelda and the Mario and
well, here's another thing, Scott. Aren't you glad you waited for all those defective units and the melt? You learned about the defective units. You learned about the melting. You learned about the scratches. You learned about the bending. So now you know have all the information you know before they put out a new version of the Switch wasn't going to be damaged so quickly.
Yeah. It, I mean, my Switch seems to be doing just fine. I'm able to put it in the dock without messing it up, and I don't know how many was defective and how much was due to user error, because, I mean, there's people that just don't know how to handle stuff.
You should have seen YouTube when the Switch was launched.
Right.
I have a day one Switch, and I haven't had an issue with it because I don't throw it around like a child.
These people weren't throwing it around. Although you have to say, you know, a lot of kids bought the Switch, which is why the 2DS is like a plastic brick.
You can't damage a 2DS. You know, when you put your Switch in the docking station, you just let gravity handle it. I can see someone smacking it down.
Here's the thing. People were like careful. We were scratching their Switches, Scott. So it wasn't like people were just using it for batting practice or throwing their Wiimotes into their TV and breaking their TVs.
Yeah, we're at a point where Nintendo gave out free handbands for that.
No, but I'm just saying people were careful and they were still bending and melting and all that stuff.
Guess they weren't as careful as me.
They had to make what's it called? New batch.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they weren't as careful as me because they blew it.
I had a three. I know a lot of people whose 360s are launch 360s that have not red ringed.
Mine was a launch 360, and it still lives. The CD tray is broken, but it still lives.
My 360 is underneath the bed because once they started doing 360 backwards compatibility, there was no more use for it. I'd rather just keep it there just in case something happens to my Xbox One.
I got a PS4 and never looked back.
That's fine. Just be careful not to bend over because you never know what Sony's going to do.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyways, last item. Go ahead, TJ.
Playground Games staffs up for the rumored Fable reboot from US Gamer. Forza Horizon 4 developer Playground Games has made 6 new hirings in total, taking former Rocksteady, EA Motive, and BioWare talent. These hirings are all for Playground Games' second studio working on a mysterious new project. GamesIndustry.biz reported that Playground Games had hired 6 new members of staff. The new recruits and their former workplaces are Noel Lukasiewicz of BioWare, Rob Dendecker of Ninja Theory, Scotty Brown of EA Motive, Chris Goodall of Ninja Theory, Joe McKiernan, previously at Playground, and Martin Lancaster of Rocksteady.
By the way, you'll notice that 2 people from Ninja Theory, which, you know, like I said, you know, Microsoft bought Playground, they bought Ninja Theory and all that stuff, so you can see the fluidness of these studios sharing people, you know?
Yeah. It's nice to know. I mean, it's interesting to see that Microsoft recognizes its talent and where to put them, hopefully, in any case. Mm-hmm. All these hires will be working at Playground Games' second studio, which was open last year. This is the studio that already hired talent from the GTA, Metal Gear Solid, and Hellblade studios. So what could the second studio be working on? Back near the beginning of this year, the sister side of US Gamer, Eurogamer, reported that Playground Games were developing a new entry in the Fable franchise. Eurogamer reported that Playground were busy staffing up for a big game near the beginning of this year, in January. And this could be what the 6 new hires might be working on at Playground. As ever, though, we'll have to wait and see for any new announcements from Playground Games or Microsoft.
Although, they do have Forza Horizon 4 coming out very shortly, and I did play that at E3, and it's the first Forza Horizon game that I'm thinking, I might actually play this one, because here's the thing, I like Forza Motorsport. A lot of people say it's boring, but I like my straight old racing game, you know, and open world racing games are like, but this one looks good. Anyways, it's going to be interesting because this is going to be Fable without Peter Molyneux.
Yay!
I hope they take Molyneux's spirit of seeing how far they can go and just take it further. Because no matter, you know, as much as Peter Molyneux promised and didn't come up with on the first Fable and the second Fable and third Fable, I still really enjoyed Fable.
Yeah. They're great games.
I hope the character interactions can amount to more than just gesturing and fart noises.
You know, farting at them.
Yeah.
You don't make fart noises. You actually literally fart at them.
Yeah, you're farting. Yeah, sorry. Farts and
You just dance and fart until everybody either loves or hates you to the right degree that you want them to.
What I love, though, is that when you played the first Fable, the first Fable did this, the other ones did not, which disappointed me, is that the way you played affected how your character aged. If you did magic, a lot of magic, your hair would get whiter and whiter and whiter. You know, every time you got knocked down or quote-unquote killed, you'd start to get scars on your face.
You know?
And the way you acted also, you know, it was a little bit too on the nose. You either became angelic with a halo going over your head or you started growing horns. That was kind of chintzy, but, you know, you did get... It wasn't just good and evil. It was also whether you were selfish or not.
Yeah.
And other stuff, you know. So, my favorite thing is if you were gluttonous or not. So I ended up, I played this way with a really big, fat, squat guy who was lawful neutral. Lawful evil, I mean. Mm-hmm. And I think he was called Diabolic or something like that, you know. I would like to see your actions having a physical effect on you, but not, you know, not a halo and horns, damn it. That's too on the nose. Just have you changing. Oh, what I loved is your dog became, if you became evil, became more of a Rottweiler sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready for a new Fable. I don't know if that's what this is going to be, but
you didn't like
I'm
the Fable Connect game?
Nah. But Fable time has passed. But time has passed. Wounds have healed. I'm ready to take on the new Fable world.
You know what was the original sin for the Fable series? You know what it introduced, which everybody took, you know, it was actually, I think, more in Japan, but this game really made it popular? Doing really simplistic mini-games for the working. You remember that?
Yeah.
Pound, pound, pound. And yet people did it because they wanted the money, and they didn't mind doing it. Pound.
Oh man, I was obsessed with getting to the top tier it took to like get the most money out of it without failing.
Yeah, that was the thing is that it would go. Let's see how far you can go. Oh, you did 245 before you made a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And dang, if you got a lot of money for that.
I also love Fable 3, but just for the story.
You know, Fable 3 is like. It's I like it and I hate it at the same time. I like that they really leaned into the specialized weapons, like where there was nothing that was normal anymore. Everything was like a gimmick weapon.
Here's the thing about Fable 3, though. The first part of the game was very lighthearted and very Monty Python-esque, as a matter of fact. Of course, you had John Cleese as your butler. Hey!
Mm-hmm.
But then came the twist in the middle of the game, and all of a sudden that game turned upside down, and it became dark real fast when the creeper showed up.
Mm-hmm.
When the creeper showed up, it's like, yeah, guess what? You can stop having fun now, because now it's going to become depressing.
Now you have a job, and you better do it, or everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
And the only way you could get around that is just become a real estate baron.
Mm-hmm.
And just do all the happy decisions and just be a real estate baron, charging a crap ton on your rent. Although, you know, and there's something to be said about Fable 2. The fantasy, when you revert back to childhood, that was heartbreaking. You know, all these Fable games have these moments in the game which just grab you, you know? Or at least the sequels. Fable 1 was basically straightforward, but Fable 2 had the dream, which was depressing as hell, and Fable 3 had the creeper. And of course, you know, there's a meme that, you know, there are Karma, Houdinis, and then there's Reaver. Reaver is evil beyond belief, and yet he keeps on getting away with everything that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, Reaver. One of my least favorite and favorite characters at the same time.
He's an awful dude.
He's an awful dude, but he's happy about it. And he never pays for his crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Teresa's depressing as hell. I mean, so Teresa's your sister in the first game. Then she becomes a bitter, blind woman who uses the rest of the main characters to her own devices.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize she's not exactly good. She's not evil, but she's not exactly good either. She's manipulative. So I'm glad there's a new Fable game coming out, and, you know, I hope it is everything that we thought the first Fable was going to be. That's what I want. Now that we have the technology, I want to see this Fable be everything Peter Molyneux said Fable was going to be now. Because it is possible now.
Yeah. And I mean, like, just give it time. Just, you got a nice array of talent there. Clearly the people behind Ninja Theory know how to craft a story.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other good talent there between BioWare and EA Motive and
Rocksteady.
And Rocksteady. Just give it time and make it something. No, there's no expectation at this point. Peter Molyneux had deadlines to meet. You don't. Nobody is expecting anything. So just take your time. Smooth it out. Make something cool.
I think if you have Grand Theft Auto and Metal Gear Solid, it's... You're about to say, Scott?
Yeah, don't make it something for a 5-year-old. That's all I would like.
I wouldn't mind... Here's the thing. I don't mind something being lighthearted. And you can have childlike, just don't be childish. You know, you can have... You can have simple, but just be deep. You know, you can have simple, but deep, you know, in which what I want are my actions change the way the world is. And we saw the sequel to Dying Light, right? And Chris Avalon is a part of it. And the big thing about that is that everything that you do in the game is going to have an effect later in the game, and it's going to change the game. I mean, we had that already. I mean, it shouldn't be a problem to do that with Fable. I mean, Fable, back in the day, what was it, 2005? 2003? Was trying to do stuff that no one had ever heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that first Jurassic Park game with the voice of Minnie Driver? You know, the one in which you look down your own boobs to see your health? That was doing things that we now take for granted, you know? Oh, it's an open-world game with dinosaur AI. Yeah, it might have been... almost impossible to do then, but now we just do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic to see what this team comes up with.
Because it's not Molyneux.
Yeah. I mean...
Oh, I miss Lionhead. Hey, at least they're making a spiritual successor to Theme Hospital.
Take Molyneux's enthusiasm and leave his arrogance at the door.
Yeah.
You don't want to have Project Milo?
No.
I'm sorry. I still wish Project Milo would come out at some point. Just have a game which you have an AI character that you talk back to. I mean, it's not too... It would be like a living Tamagotchi. Except on, you know... That's one game we have to talk about. I don't know if... I think we did a gaming history about it a long time ago, but we need to do another gaming history about it. The game Little Computer People. The original Sims. Do you remember Little Computer People?
No.
So that was a game, and I'm going to be very brief about it, in which it was a C64 game that I remember very well. It would come with a disc, and there would be a unique character on your disc, and that's it. That was the only character you're ever going to get, was the character that was on the floppy that you got. And you had to tell them your name and all that stuff. One of the funny things is a friend of mine said that the little computer person's name was Dave, and his name was Dave. And when he typed in, "What's your name?" he said, "Dave." The little computer person refused to believe his name was Dave. It's like, you can't have the same name as me. Stop fucking around with me. And it was constantly unhappy after that. Like, how dare you have the same name as me? But yeah, I mean, you would get him a pet. You would send food to his door. It was Tamagotchi, way before Tamagotchi. You got to look it up. It was a 1983 game, I think. Little Computer People from EA. Check it out. I think they actually have versions that you can play from the browser somewhere. Yeah, Little Computer People was fun. And it was shockingly advanced for the time. Anyways, I guess we can all say that we're excited for Fable.
For sure, or whatever it is that they're coming up with.
Well, it's Fable. I'm hoping it's Fable. Well, if it's something else, it's fine, but I want Fable, damn it.
So is it going to be for PC and Xbox?
Probably. I'm willing to bet you anywhere it's going to be for Windows 10 and Xbox.
Okay.
Because that's the thing with Microsoft right now. They're saying, you know what, the Windows platform, it's ours. So yes, Sony, you could have your stuff on PS4 and PC, but guess who's on PC? Oh, that's us! it may not be our store, maybe Steam, but it's still us.
Mm-hmm.
And our gamers can still play the games on there. That's why Halo Infinite is going to be PC as well on the same day. They say, screw it, you know what? Windows platform is ours. We don't need Halo to sell the Xbox. The Xbox is going to sell Halo. I mean, it's not to say that people aren't probably going to gravitate towards the Xbox version of Halo Infinite.
For sure.
But you know what? This would be really funny, is if it's multi-platform, you know what? We're going to release Halo Infinite on the Switch, and because they're not really a competitor, and guess what? Screw you, Sony. Hey, look, you know, they actually built up a Halo game for the original Nintendo DS.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine Halo on the DS? I mean, you don't have to imagine it. You could already see it. How the reactions would have been had it actually been released. Microsoft announcing, now for the Nintendo DS, Halo.
That would have been an interesting... I think there's a lot of Xbox fans that might not have cared or whatever.
They did bring out Viva Pinata for the DS. They brought out Zoo Tycoon for the DS. They released games for the DS. It's just that Halo could have been one of them. And it was possibly going to be one of them. And it was actually... Here's the thing. They actually released the Duke Nukem game on the DS. And Halo is very similar. And it was very, you know... So you could release a really good shooter on the DS if you wanted to. For whatever reason, Microsoft said, maybe not. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gaming/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chuds.
I am at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week after this 90-minute podcast.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Yeah. And, of course, we had our little unofficial gaming history of Red Dead Redemption. And
that was a fun surprise.
Yeah. And you know what? It's coming out in October, and I'm ready for it. Or is it September?
October.
October, right. I got my card ready for it. Are you guys going to buy it?
Of course.
I'm going to be getting Dragon Quest XI, so I won't be getting that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I played that at E3, and I'm going to tell you something, Scott, you are not going to be disappointed. As a matter of fact, Good. Here's the thing, as buried as you were in Breath of the Wild, I'm willing to bet you that you're not going to be able to come out of your bedroom for, like, an entire weekend at the very least, 72 hours straight playing Dragon Quest XI.
I look forward to it.